really excited. I got news just a couple weeks ago I was going to get a chance to do this. This program, this Young Producer program, was designed, and we talked about the last couple years, to try to encourage some new folks to come to BIF. And I see a lot of new faces out there, and I think that's great. I think that's exactly what we had hoped would happen, although there's certainly from a definition of young producer, there's lots of different options. Bob Weber, who was on the program earlier, is much younger than I am, but he's far more mature than I am. And folks in the audience, Mr. John Raftopoulos here from Craig, Colorado, is much, much older than I am. However, from an enthusiasm and an interest in doing new things and improving, there won't find many people here that are more interested in those things. So I think age is extremely relative, and we're going to go through that just a little bit here. But we do want to talk about opportunities in this panel. That was why the panel was put together. Actually, Brandy put the panel together, and it just so happened a couple of the people here on the panel I work with, which makes it a lot easier and a lot easier to introduce them. But what I am going to do is give them a chance to introduce themselves, just a couple minutes, talk to you about who they are, where they came from, so you folks can find some commonality maybe in the things that they do or have done in their life's direction, and then we'll hit them with kind of a posed question for each one of them. That we put together ahead of time, so if they do a good job, it's because they practiced. And then give you a chance to ask some questions, too. But we did decide to go in chronological order from oldest to youngest with the introductions. And the first person I'm going to have introduce himself is Mr. Clint Berry. Clint does work with us at Allied and is a part owner of the Allied business. Works with Superior Livestock as a representative. And everything that has to do with the commercial cattle business is Clint's forte. So, Clint, I'll give you a chance to do a little bit more.
I appreciate that oldest to youngest deal. Yeah.
I'm scared to give you the microphone.
As Marty said, I'm Clint Berry. I live in southern Missouri. I'm a fifth-generation rancher. My family operates in West Texas as well as southern Missouri. Kind of a diversified deal. We do some cow-calf. We also do some heifer development when the market says that it's time to do heifer development. Have done some yearlings in the past. In previous life, I worked as the commercial marketing director for the Red Angus Association and have had the opportunity to work with producers from one end of the country to the other. That's kind of how I got into the Superior Livestock end of it, where I specialize in marketing Superior genetic feeder cattle and replacement heifers. My customer base and my buyer base are actively looking for cattle with known genetics. That's what we specialize in. Not commodity-based cattle, but high-premium type cattle. And even beyond that, in past life, I worked as a pen rider right here in Mississippi. I used to live at West Point, just north of Starkville. I also have worked on the kill floor as an inspector for, at that time it was IBP, now it's Tyson, but one of the nation's largest meat packers. So I've had a pretty diverse background and had the opportunity and the blessing to be exposed to different segments of the beef industry and really kind of helped shape, I guess, a bigger picture model is what I would say. But go ahead.
Second on the panel is Joe Epperly. I've got to get his title here right, Assistant Executive Director of the North American Limousine Foundation. He says that puts him second in line, which means that the shit runs uphill and downhill through him. So he's got a lot of responsibility. But Joe, actually, Joe's the youngest member of the panel. You might not have guessed that by just looking.
Well, thank you for that, Marty. He was talking about 1999 earlier, and I got to figuring that was eighth grade for me, Bob. So I was really in the genomics at that time. So I grew up, I'm about eighth generation poor Virginia farmer. And we, growing up, we had a registered Angus herd, ran a livestock market to go along with that. And grew up showing cattle and marketing cattle throughout the Midwest, feeding cattle throughout the Midwest as well. So just as Clint said, I got exposed to a lot of different types of the industry. And to go along with that, I went to college and went to college to be a civil engineer. And after 3 years, I finally got up the guts to tell Pops that's not what I wanted to be. And so came back to agriculture and animal science, took a job working for a registered Angus outfit. Right out of college, worked there for about 18 months and got the opportunity to move to Limousine, where I was going to be the commercial marketing director And due to some absences at that association at that time, I started moving up, taking on more responsibility for performance operations, member service, and like Marty said, just kind of going through a lot of different things. Now serve on the BIF board and a couple international committees for limousine. So sure been blessed and truthfully just been lucky that I've had people like Joe Cassie, like Bob Weber, like Jim Gibb, who've helped mentor me through this.
Thanks, Joe. The third board, panel member is Garrett Thomas. Garrett's a native Texan through and through and through and through and through. Garrett works with us, too, and also is an owner of the Allied Genetics business. He specializes in seed stock marketing, and he's got a lot of experience for somebody of his age and had a lot of success there, and I'll let Garrett go on a little bit more.
Sure. Thanks, Marty. I grew up in East Texas, had the chance to participate in FFA and 4-H growing up, had the opportunity to go to junior college out of state to do some livestock judging, came back to A&M and did that as well. After I got through school, I had the chance to manage a ranch. I did that for almost 3 years in South Texas. The 3 years that it didn't rain, that was when I was down there. So that was definitely a challenging experience. You definitely get creative in a scenario like that. I left there, and I kind of had the chance to do a few other things while pursuing a master's degree. But I've worked for Breed Association. I've had the chance to do a little work at a university. On the lecturing side of things, and then I've had the chance to be with Allied here for just about 2 years. So it's been a great experience for me, kind of to get to where I'm at today. But definitely looking forward to this part of the panel.
Well, thanks, Garrett. What we've come up with as far as questions for the panel, we're going to ask each one of them about a little different segment of the business, and probably skew those comments towards BIF and towards some of the goals and important reasons why folks come to BIF, but looking at it from three different directions. I mean, these folks, for the number of years they've been in the beef business, have been involved in a lot of different segments and a lot of different aspects, and I hope that their success and the things that they have to say can motivate some of you, maybe provide a little bit more enthusiasm about the opportunity that exists today, because there sure is a lot. What we've asked Clint to talk about is to address maybe to some of you that are more interested in production, whether that be seed stock production, commercial production, what are some of the unique opportunities that exist in that area right now? And Clint's going to take a few minutes and talk about his views on that.
Thank you. I guess to address that, you know, I got to thinking a lot about the panel and what we'd be sitting here talking about today and talking to a group of young producers, and I got to thinking how much things have changed and how much things have stayed the same. 70 years ago, if my grandfather was sitting here in a room to speak to a bunch of young producers, they'd talk about opportunity and they'd talk about challenges. And 30 years ago, they'd talk about opportunities and talk about challenges. And while some of that is going to be consistent, you might say, over time, one of the things right now we're looking at is some pretty unique circumstances. Never in my lifetime, till about 4 or 5 years ago, which means some of you in the room, since Marty pointed out I'm in the majority of the age, not the minority of the age, some of you in this room may never heard this statement. But we were told all of my grandfather's life, all of my father's life, and the vast majority of mine, that if you wanted to make a living in the beef business, you had to go get a job somewhere else and then come back to it when you brought some money back to the table. Well, for the first time in our lives, that opportunity exists to make a living in the beef business. Now, that might not be the same, to get to Marty's question, that might not be the same production model that my grandfather would have approached or that my father has approached. And it's not the same model that I would have approached 10 years ago. But we have opportunities now from a price and a demand standpoint for our product that we never could have dreamed of. I mean, in general, in 2.5 years, we've done that in 150 years. That's pretty amazing. And it 50% right now does not mean that for the rest of our life we will be at 50% right now. That face our current industry, our product. We have a growing affluent population, and Americans forget this sometimes because as a country we don't especially in another 10 or 15 years. That gets to be very challenging. I also see it as an opportunity. You know, I see that there's great flexibility and opportunity for people that have the ability to be flexible in their approach or in their talent efforts. It's really difficult. You know what the number one limiting factor in the expansion of a beef enterprise is right now? Who wants to take a wild guess at that one? Anybody out there? What's the number one thing that keeps programs from growing?
Capital.
Say it again.
Real estate.
Real estate? Well, money? Those are both correct answers. They are not the right answer. Number one thing that people tell me, my customers, my buyers, people that I sell cattle for and buy cattle for, the people that I'm involved with on a daily basis, is labor. How many of you in the room would like to have a job for another 20 or 30 years? That plays into our favor. That's an opportunity. 2% of the world's population is involved in, let me say it right, 2% of the U.S. population is involved in production agriculture. While that limits our ability to be important to the 98% at times, it also means we're incredibly important to the 98%. And so having that ability to learn how to do multiple things makes us incredibly valuable. But it's hard to believe that that's a limiting factor. There's never been a better time to be in agriculture. That's the way that I look at it, not to mention the return on what we do invest in and what we do produce, because there's very few of us that can do it. There's very few of us that have the intention, the want to, or desire to do it. Not very many people out there, and those of you that are still in school, those of us that have been out, how many people wants to work 60 hours a week for the rest of their life and never retire? That's what we do because we love it. We're passionate about it. So going forward, there's extreme opportunities. There's extreme opportunity in specialized sections of agriculture. That's what I do. That's what most of us sitting here do. But so, I mean, when we talk about production, the only thing that I would say is, we're going to have to tackle some of these opportunities and turn our challenges into those, but tackle them with a flexibility and an openness that our forefathers never had to face before. And that's kind of where I see the uniqueness of it.
Thanks, Clint. I found out something new about Clint. He's only working 60 hours a week. And you'll probably get a little bit more out of him than that. But we appreciate your comments, Clint. I think you're dead on with that. Joe is going to cover a little bit, maybe a little bit more toward the BIF perspective, but he's going to talk about opportunities in the genetic improvement business, regardless of where that might fit across the industry.
So kind of piggyback on what Clint's talking about, there's challenges, but there's also a wealth of new tools. I mean, genomics, as Bob was illustrating from a 30,000-foot level, has opened up a wide variety of both job opportunities and breeding opportunities for us. I mean, I couldn't have imagined when I was paying $96 for my first load of feeder cattle that I bought that we'd be where we are today, but I also didn't think that we'd be able to pull tail hair out of a two-day-old calf, and I could tell you what his genetic potential was. So we're opening up a whole new world, and it's accelerating at such a rate that it's hard to get a good feel on where it's going. I mean, I can see when we talk about sequence data, when we talk about feed efficiency, when we talk about cow lifetime productivity, hey, we can get a hold of that right now. And part of that, and where I think and in my own life where that challenge is going to be, and maybe for some of you, it's not only taking the science and where the science can go, but getting that adapted at the ranch level and getting those guys and having them understand and use those opportunities and those tools that we can develop and use them appropriately. And appropriately is the key, because as Bob was illustrating, they want to take a piece of the tool and not the whole tool. And trying to lead the way, and you're here, so you're in that leadership role, I think, leading the way in what we're going to drive it to. I mean, we've got to produce more cattle, but as you say, there's not any more land. We've added, 300 pounds to the carcass in the last 30 years? How much further can we push that animal? What can we change about genetics there? I think genetic opportunities are going to lie in the cow herd. They're going to lie in fertility. I mean, we're of the United States cow herd, we're only producing about 60% calf crop, 60 to 70 that make it to kill. So what can we do disease-wise? What can we do fertility-wise to maximize the herd that we have? So I think genetics and genomics hold some answers there. You'll hear about the BRD project. You'll hear about feed efficiency because Lord knows when we're putting corn into our gas tanks, we got to find out a more efficient way to use every bit that we get. So as we look at genetic opportunities, I think not only is it going to be how do we use it, but how do we manage it? The amount of data that we have now is astronomical, not just the genomic side, but the openness and willingness of the industry to contribute data. I was visiting with a producer just about a month ago, and we're trying to figure out how to leverage all of their 50,000 worth of feedlot data and bring it all the way back to the sires, some way that we can evaluate sires all the way through. That's data we've never had on that level, going all the way through feeder, rancher, commercial guy, tracked EID every step of the way, every bit of data they have. How do we handle that? That's going to be a challenge, and it's going to be something where there's a lot of opportunity that lays there, both in answering that challenge and then coming up with a solution and what we can do with all those things.
Great. Good job, Joe. Garrett's going to take on the next question. He's going to look at opportunities, talk about opportunities in the marketing business, and whether that be industry-wise, whether that be seed stock, but those are things that have been square in the direction of Garrett's life plan ever since he got started.
You bet. I think there's one thing that we can all agree on, and that is there's a lot of money at stake right now in the beef industry. Like we talked about, Bob touched on this a little bit earlier, you know, bulls are worth a lot more than what they've ever been worth. Feeder calves are worth a whole lot more. Think about what the beef industry looked like just 10 years ago. I saw something in the hotel room earlier today. It was, 10 years ago, I was at Texas A&M. We were getting ready for a hurricane to come in and wipe out a good portion of the coast here. But think about where we were at in the industry just 10 years ago, where we were at from a technology standpoint, how we the general practices that we use, and how much those things have changed. Speaking as somebody, I guess, in the younger generation, as I've been labeled here, we're definitely a generation of instant gratification. Can we agree on that? I mean, the folks of you sitting in the room, or I'm talking about the 20s and 30s, and maybe even Clint. But we like instant gratification. We're a generation that's never had to wonder about anything. Why do we not have to wonder about anything? There's a one word answer to this: Google. We just Google it. If we want to know who was the 32nd president, we don't have to wonder who it is. We can just Google it, and it's that instant gratification that it's hard being my age, because there's so many things that I want to do, and I want to have 500 cows and be able to do all these different things and be aggressive and do those. And my suggestion is that it's hard to not want those things, but you have to be patient. You have to be able to buy your time, remain profitable, make sound business decisions. And with this added money or profitability that's in the industry right now, there's two things that I think have become pretty obvious. There's obviously going to be a lot more opportunities, whether it's in the service side of things from a data management standpoint or more my job where we manage sales. People are more willing to take advantage of these services because there's a little more money in their pocket, and they're able to see, with some of these services, increased value or increased profit. There's more people are more willing to adapt new technologies, and those of you who are maybe lagging back or who have lagged back on adopting these technologies are going to be further behind as they look forward. And obviously, there's an opportunity for growth. Whenever there's more money and people want to grow, they want to do it on an exponential basis. So those are all opportunities. But with that, when there's more money involved, there's always going to be more competition. And, I'm sure as some of the young producers in here, there's not very many of you guys who are under 30 that have 1,000 cows already or are selling 200 or 300 bulls a year. And I think it's important as a smaller producer and as a young producer, you have to be the small guy who operates as a bigger producer, be willing to be a part of something that's big, because that's what keeps you going. That allows you to put some money in the bank, be able to grow your operation. And I guess an example of this that kind of comes to mind is we work with a group in Missouri, New Day Genetics. It's not a lot of huge producers. It's a lot of smaller operations that have got together. They feed their bulls together. They market as one group. And instead of being an Angus breeder that has 25 bulls to sell in a year, now he's a part of New Day Genetics that will sell, you know, 250 or 300 bulls in a year. And think about the services and the resources a bigger pool of genetics like that can offer. You know, if you're just a small guy trying to sell a small number of bulls, you're operating as a smaller producer. And if you can be a part of something a little bit bigger, like the example I'm telling you about, there's value in that. And that's not maybe to say that's your answer long term, but I'm telling you, as a younger producer, you may have to be willing to do some of those things to kind of keep things going down the line. So one other thing that Dr. Weber talked about is the Cadillac versus Chevy. Has anybody had to rent a car recently and had the opportunity to drive one of those nice Cadillac Escalades? Anybody in here had the chance to do that? I had the chance to do that. It was not any extra cost for the record of my job. But I tell you what, it was really hard to get back in the little Cadillac or in the little Chevy Envoy on the next trip. You know, people get used to those added value, the added technology, the smooth ride that we find in the Cadillac. And after those customers are willing to start to buy those bulls and pay for that added advantage and added technology, the odds are they're not going to go back because the added value is something that becomes pretty evident. So I'll just wrap up on a few things with this question. I would say that as I work with a lot of these large ranches all across the U.S., I'm watching people that are about my age, and typically what, like Clint was talking about, they've had to go off the ranch and work, or go off the farm and work for, you know, 10 years before they could come back. Maybe that's whenever dad was ready to retire or slow down or something like that. And that's not, you know, necessarily what's happening anymore. A lot of these operations, those kids are having the chance to stick around and be a part of that, and that's, I think that's huge. That's a good sign for our generation that we're at a point where we're profitable enough to where our generation can stick around. So I'll leave it back to you, Marty.
All right. Thanks, Gary. That was good, all of you. I think we've got you guys just right on time. It's fantastic. But we do have some time. We've got about 15 minutes for questions. And I really encourage you, we haven't had any questions yet, and I actually told somebody back here they're going to ask a question. So hopefully they're still on with that. But trying to get some discussion going, that's the value in being young and being able to network both with people your own age that are enthusiastic and growing and changing, as well as interfacing the folks here at BIF, is that you have a chance to interact. And you're not going to get as much out of these three without that kind of interaction unless we come up with a question or two. Oh, Jared. Thank you. Jared Wareham.